Lewis.
And this is Ian.
And welcome to 101 Films You Should Have Seen.
Probably.
Back on a glorious summer's day.
Yeah, indeed.
Summer's finally arrived.
You're back, full stop.
Well, yeah, I'm back. I'm back from Scotland. I noticed there was a guest last week.
We did, yeah. You can't listen to that one, though, can you?
No, well, I've
because it's
film.
Too hurtful. That's why it upsets you too much to hear me cheating on you with another podcaster.
It did feel like cheating.
It did.
It did feel like cheating.
Yeah,
let's never do that again. No, I think it's. I like the idea of having guests on every now and then.
We might do it again in the future, won't we?
Let's talk. Let's mix it up.
What we didn't actually say, Lewis wasn't actually really on holiday, he just sat in the corner watching me and Paul broadcast.
And touching myself.
Just smoking a single cigarette. All you could see is in the dark, just see the end of his cigarette as he watched. Oh, that's a nice image. So have you seen any films with your long holiday?
I have. Another holiday.
Did you watch, what's that film with Ted Danson when he finds the Loch Ness Monster?
Loch Ness.
Is it called just
it
Loch Ness?
It is called Loch Ness.
Oh, that's a bit of a
I saw that on a special screening, I remember, when I was a kid.
Special screening.
It was a free screening at the new cinema that they'd opened just near me.
Wow.
It wasn't that good.
No.
Anyway, I saw a couple of good films.
Oh, yeah.
I watched All About Eve. Brilliant 1950 film starring Bette Davis, which I think we should do for the podcast, actually. It's very
okay,
good.
Okay, we'll see.
Oh, yeah, don't get too excited. And the other one was Manhattan Murder Mystery, a Woody Allen film from the early 90s. Very good.
Mm.
Very good. Enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah.
Anyway, this week we're doing A Fistful of Dollars.
Yeah.
Which was your recommendation.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I thought we should do at least one Western.
Well, you know, I don't think I've ever seen a Western. No, I'm sure I must have. No, actually, I'm not sure I have.
What, all the way through?
Yeah, unless you count Wild Wild West.
Yeah, I do. I mean, actually, that's where Westerns peaked. Wild Wild West.
But yeah, so you've seen, this is part of a trilogy, isn't it? The Dollars trilogy, or the Man with No Name trilogy.
Yes. You've got A Fistful of Dollars, A Few Dollars More, and then The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Okay.
We were debating, weren't we, whether to do The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, or A Fistful of Dollars, because I'd seen The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly before. Mm. And it is very good, but it does clock in at 2.5 hours. And I think
it's
we
funny,
decided
we choose our films based on how long
and
they are.
Also, this was the first.
Yeah.
And this was the one. Yeah, without this film, there wouldn't have been The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah.
So it kind of felt important to do this one instead.
Well, I very much enjoyed it. You know, I was really gripped.
Yeah.
You know, particularly the ending was fantastic.
I must admit, I got the impression that you perhaps weren't particularly looking forward to watching it.
No, I think my idea of a Western was kind of based on Bonanza, probably.
Bonanza. Yeah.
And so I kind of had it in my head that that's what it would be like, but it's nothing like that.
No, not at all. No, no, it's almost. Actually, the thing that Fistful of Dollars reminded me quite a bit of was Hammer Horror.
Oh, right.
Had that kind of same sensibility of someone just tearing up the rule book a bit, of taking the basic tropes of a genre and then just giving it a real shot in the arm.
Yeah, well, the violence. I mean, we talk
about
that.
Up in the blood, up in the violence, lurid colour.
Yeah, there's a lot of blood in the film, and it is that Hammer Horror colour, that kind of weird red that really blood isn't that colour at all. I was surprised by the violence. I can see how this would have completely shaken up the Western genre.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I've not really watched any of the Westerns that perhaps this was trying to break away from. But I think just through pop culture and watching American television, you just get a perception of the kind of thing a Western will be.
Yeah.
Very simplistic, very moral, black hat, white hat characters, no sort of grey areas whatsoever. And this film, it's all about, it's an anti-hero, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of went into this thinking, okay, well, Clint Eastwood is like the hero who comes in and cleans up town, but it's not that simple at all, really. If anything, he's just there to make his own money. You know, all he cares about is money, you know, and how he can play the baddies off each other just to try and fill his own pockets.
He has a couple of moral moments in it, but to be honest, he's almost like the hero by default, just by being not as horrible as the others and being quite cool.
Yeah.
That's kind of how he becomes the main character.
Exactly. But because of that, I didn't really know where it was going. So it was interesting. You know, before I watched the film, I kind of heard, okay, well, you know, good versus bad, blah, blah, blah. But actually, it's a bit more complicated than that.
Yeah, definitely. What would you say the pitch for this film would be?
I guess it's the prequel to Back to the Future 3.
Yeah, that's true. There's loads of bits in Back to the Future 3 that reference this film.
Exactly. It's funny, I know more about this film from Back to the Future 3 than I did about anything else.
It appears in Back to the Future 2, doesn't it? Because because he's watching a Biff in the jacuzzi is watching this. That's where he gets the idea at the end of Back to the Future 3 to wear the plate, doesn't he?
Right.
To stop the bullets.
It's so clever.
It is. Let's just talk about Back to the Future 3 and Back to the Future 2.
We're going to have a Back to the Future marathon one of these days.
Oh, maybe we should do that. Oh, delicious.
You're spoiling us with this Back to the Future goodness.
So, getting back to A Fistful of Dollars, to talk about the plot, there isn't a huge amount of plot, is there? It's quite simplistic.
Yeah. Man turns up, border somewhere in Mexico, border town, and then there's two camps, two groups of...
Some brothers who are villains and a...
The sheriff.
The sheriff and his family, who are kind of also villains.
Yeah.
And they just sort of are battling for control, and the man with no name plays them off each other.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
But it is a little bit more complex than that, in the sense that, you know, some of his schemes are quite clever, you know.
Yeah.
It was, you know, that's the thing, he's not just all about the quick draw, he's a brainy old git.
Indeed,
old Clint.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things it sort of reminded me of was also like a video game. Kind of kept being sort of given
missions. Everything reminds you of video games.
No, but he kind of being kept given missions. Yeah, like he then had to go off and do something and then come back, and then he would meet the other characters, they would give him a mission, then he'd go off.
I see what you mean.
And it kind of builds to the end with a big sort of where it all kind of comes together.
Yeah. Actually, no, you said it, actually. I can see it. It does have that kind of structure, doesn't it? No, it's...
I suppose for me as well, because I played Red Dead Redemption, which draws heavily on these kind of spaghetti westerns for their kind of themes and feel. But all the way through, I don't know, maybe because the influence of this film, I kept being reminded of lots of things. And as I say, Hammer Horror, just the drive and energy of it, kind of sort of main thing that... What a great film that would be, you know, having The Man With No Name versus Dracula in the Wild West.
That would be
Christopher
good.
Lee Dracula.
Oh, make that happen.
I know, if only you could. Imagine that. Clint Eastwood, Peter Cushion.
That's a missed opportunity.
But what I really enjoyed about this was, to say, that kind of drive, that precision to it. It starts and it just doesn't stop. It just keeps on building until that kind of gloriously violent, over-the-top ending.
Yeah.
And he's just cool all the way through.
He is cool.
Yeah, that line, yeah, like... Prepare three graves, and then when he kills them all, comes back and goes, "My mistake, four." Brilliant.
He's awesome. I want to have his kids. He's amazing.
Man, painfully young, isn't he?
He is so young. He's so skinny.
Anyway, before we get too bogged down in Clint, let's move on to the trivia quiz.
I know you want to get bogged down in Clint.
Trivia quiz.
Question one: what's the man with no name's name?
The man with no name's name.
Yeah. The man with no name actually has a name, and one of the characters says it in this film.
Oh, he does, because it's I actually looked out for that in the credits to see if they're in, and it's just called Joe.
That's right, yeah.
Joe.
Did they call him Joe in the other films as well?
I don't know, actually. I don't know offhand. It would be funny if it was something a bit more...
Keith.
Yeah, Keith. I was going to say Keith as well. What is it about the name Keith that just straight away... it's a very ordinary name, I think.
You showed them Keith.
Yeah.
Okay, question two. What's the nationality of Marianne Koch, who plays Marisol in the film?
Is she German?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Okay.
What a multicultural cast it was for this film. Anyway, we'll talk about that in a sec. And question three. What film did Sergio Leone direct starring Robert De Niro as a gangster?
Ooh.
I think it was 1984 he directed this.
I don't know.
It was Once Upon a Time in America.
Oh, of course it was.
Yeah.
Okay, my questions. Question one. What links A Fistful of Dollars and the play, which you've seen, One Man and Two Governors?
Oh, right. Yeah, it's the old Italian play, A Servant of Two Masters.
That's right. They're both based on that particular 18th century play.
Have you seen One Man, Two Governors?
No, I haven't.
Good play.
Is it similar to A Fistful of Dollars?
It's a more comedic take.
Yeah.
More of a comedic take.
They boost the comedy Undertaker role. Okay, question two. What was added to the film to make it suitable for TV broadcast?
Oh yeah, I read this. There was a prologue added to the TV version saying with a kind of sheriff enlisting Joe to go to the town and clean it up.
Don't call him Joe. I mean, I know.
I'm going to say Joe.
It's a man with no name. That's that just kind
such
of
such a mouthful. Man with no name. Just
a man
say Joe.
With no name. Use just his real Joe. Name. Just Joe.
Keith.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. A 4.5 minute prologue, where he's just given a mission to. He's told he can basically get a pardon if he sorts out the mess in that town. Basically, they thought that it needed a moral dimension. It needed to give him a reason to do it all, rather than just making money. It's quite interesting. Mm. And question three: what was the film's original title?
In Italian?
No.
No.
No, it had a name before.
Oh, I knew this, but I've forgotten it. What was it?
It was The Magnificent Stranger. Not quite as good.
It's
is
not
it?
As good, is
what
it?
What would the second one have been? The Magnificent Stranger Again. Interestingly, though, Clint Eastwood was never told about the film being changed, yeah. The title being changed. So for the first month the film was out, he didn't realise. And so there was all this buzz about A Fistful of Dollars, and he had no idea that it was about the film that he was in.
Oh, that's funny, isn't it? Speaking of Clint Eastwood, though, this film really made him, didn't it? You know, it came out in 1964.
Yeah, before that, I think Clint had been a TV actor. Because I think he was in Rawhide.
You see, before kind of watching this film, I was thinking it would be like Rawhide and Bonanza, all those old series that, you know.
God, Bonanza just makes me think of Sundays.
Oh, rubbish. It's terrible. That and the, what was it, the Sullivans and, what was that other one? Littlest House on the
Prairie. Oh, The Little House on the Prairie, yeah.
Oh, dreadful TV. So yeah, you know, I was thinking Rawhide's pretty kind of, you know, by the numbers. It's all very moral.
Great theme tune, though.
It does have a great theme tune. You're going to sing it for us?
No, but it's a great theme tune. You can listen to the Blues
Brothers. Yeah.
Listen to the Blues Brothers version for the best version of the Rawhide theme tune. The definitive, in my humble opinion.
But yeah, this film completely shot him to stardom. But it wasn't released in America for 2 years or something after it was released in Italy.
Yeah, it was released, I think, in 1964. It was released in Italy because it was, you know, famously one of the spaghetti westerns. Sometimes described as the first spaghetti western, but it was really the first Italian-made western to just break through to the American market. It's strange because, of course, when it was released in Italy, it was released with Italian voices. And so, actually, Clint Eastwood didn't record his voice over. Because that was the peculiar thing about this film. Because it used international cast, it was filmed in silent. And the track was then added afterwards.
So they're all just speaking their own language?
Yeah. And then Clint didn't actually record his lines until 1967. So it was he did that in 1964, and then 3 years later.
That's weird, isn't it?
That is really strange. Yeah.
It did strike me at first, you know, how strange it is. Because you're watching the film, and it seems like Clint is speaking his words, because what he's saying matches up with...
Yeah, it matches very well.
But then all the other characters, they're quite clearly dubbed.
Yeah.
It must have been so confusing to film.
It must have been, yeah. I think all these things, this such an iconic role, there's a long list on Wikipedia and IMDb about the actors who turned it down. Mm. And one of them who was actually the guy who recommended Clint... His name escapes me now. But,
he was in Rawhide, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think so. And he refused to do it simply because he'd had such a bad time doing a film in Europe before. But he was appearing in Rawhide, actually, Clint, and this enabled him... Basically, he had a contract clause that said he couldn't film any movies in the US while he was on Rawhide, but it didn't mention Europe, so that's why he took the job when he was in Europe. And the rest is history.
But, he's fantastic. The fact he was, 15th choice for the role, he completely made it his own.
Very charismatic.
Yeah.
Incredibly charismatic. And he had quite a hand in sort of picking the look for that character.
Well, yeah, he kind of bought the poncho and all the boots and all that kind of
stuff. Yeah, the hats, he bought the guns, he bought the jeans as well from, shop in Hollywood somewhere.
Didn't he nick the gun from Rawhide or something?
Yeah, he brought some of the Rawhide props with him. I think the hat's from Rawhide. So he sort of threw this together and created this really unusual but iconic look. And now that's sort of just, you kind of look at that and go, that's a very, very typical look for a cowboy.
Yeah.
But it must have been very striking when it first came along.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I read a great quote from Sergio Leone about how when he was casting the character, he said he just wanted someone who was a mask, really, rather than a kind of forceful personality. And he said Clint Eastwood has only got two expressions, hat and no hat.
Well, I think as well, it's almost like a countercultural cowboy.
Mm.
Yeah, even though this is only released in 64, he's really young. Clint Eastwood's a very young guy in it. Very kind of authority-bucking, doesn't care. Yeah, it has a certain style panache about him. Yeah, it's a million miles away from that kind of black hat, white hat style of Western. Mm. Have you seen Blazing Saddles?
Yes.
Well, there you go, you have seen another Western.
Does that count?
Yeah, I would say so. How about Carry On Cowboy? Have you seen Carry On Cowboy?
No, I haven't seen Carry On Cowboy.
Those are really the three.
Should I have done?
Carry On Cowboy? It's not bad. My fact was that Carry On Cowboy was the only British Western, the only Western to be filmed in the UK. But I think actually that's not true. I mean, perhaps a couple of other things have been filmed in the UK as well. A couple of other Westerns. It's certainly probably the most popular British Western. But yeah, I've never been a fan of Westerns.
Yeah, they've never really interested me.
It's weird that it always felt to me like a very old-fashioned... Well, firstly, it's weird that there's an entire genre of film set in a very tiny part of American history, the Western.
Yeah.
I guess it taps into American culture, but it's weird that that's become an entire genre of film.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? It's kind of got its own tropes and things, you know, the stranger riding into town and the saloon bar and...
Yeah, exactly.
Prostitutes and all this kind of
stuff. The iconography of a Western is instantly recognisable.
Yeah, even though I've barely watched any of them.
Yeah.
I still know all of the tropes, you know.
I mean, I suppose an example of a modern Western, Django Unchained.
Ah, well, technically an Eastern.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that's very true. But, essentially this kind of vision of it has the saloon bar, has the look.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of reminds me a little bit, actually, of A Fistful of Dollars.
Yeah, definitely.
Violence.
You can see Tarantino really drew a lot from Sergio Leone for those films.
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know what it is. They've always left me a bit cold.
Westerns.
Yeah. I don't know why.
It's because you're not American.
Like, do you think that? But, I mean, that was, like, kids, I would say, in Britain years ago used to love Westerns. I mean, that's why. Mm. Westerns were kind of a dying genre in the US. And Leone made it because he knew there was a massive gap in the market, or still a want in Europe for Westerns.
Mm.
So... Yeah, Europeans used to love that kind of vision of American culture, cowboys and Indians and that sort of thing. But
I suppose there is an appeal of,
it's exotic, maybe?
Exotic, like it's wild, you know, the Wild West, you know, anything can happen. It's all kind of, the people are making their own way, you know, there's that sense of freedom, I guess. Perhaps that's, in that sense, maybe that's why the Westerns are so popular, because it embodies that American sense of freedom.
Yeah.
Know, choosing your own destiny.
Just never seemed... Yeah, it never grabbed me. And then so when I saw The Good, the Bad and the Ugly years ago, and that I think was probably like the first, like, I suppose, proper Western I ever saw, what shocked me was how just interesting it was. And the fact it was set during the American Civil War and, it seemed to be a little bit more... It just became like a film that just happened to be set at a time rather than the fact that it was this Western.
Mm.
And I think The Fistful of Dollars has the same thing. Because, of course, we've already said it was based kind of on a One Man, Two Servants.
It was also based on Yojimbo.
Yes, a Japanese film.
Akira Kurosawa film, which I haven't seen.
No.
I really want to see some more Akira Kurosawa. That's a tongue twister, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kurosawa.
Well, was it originally... Leone denied that he'd based...
Yeah, but then they sued them. Apparently...
got 15% of the worldwide takings, didn't he?
Yeah, Kurosawa said he made far more from suing them than he did from actually releasing Yojimbo himself.
Well, fair enough. I think Sergio Leone never pretended he hadn't seen it. I think he was like, yeah. But he sort of tried to say he'd based it on the same... materials like One Man, Two Servants, and I think something else had influenced that Japanese film. But still,
So one thing that really shocked me actually about this film is just the level of violence. I think it is, even today, I still think it's quite gratuitous.
I must be honest, it didn't really stand out for me, the violence. No, I don't know if I just was...
A lot of people die in this film.
Yeah, I suppose so.
People get set on fire and shot, or shot then set on fire, or fall of things and then get shot.
The only thing I actually found interesting was the fact that the stranger, and that's a neat, quick way of describing him, the stranger.
Joe's quicker.
Gets beaten up and by the kind of gang, he's captured. And I so just presumed after it would cut, and he would cut back to him in the cell, and he would have sort of sorted himself out, and you know, perhaps a couple of cuts, but that's it, he would be okay. But in fact, he's properly beaten up, and he can barely walk, and he sort of has to crawl his way out.
One of the best scenes.
Yeah, it's one of the best sequences, because he basically gets won over on the entire gang just by sort of sneaking around. Mm. But you know, his eyes closed up, and he can, like he sort of can't really properly use his hand. His hand's holding one arm in. It looks like it's been broken. And I just wasn't expecting that. It was like a real proper realistic depiction.
Yeah, he properly got done over, didn't he?
Yeah.
Really got done over.
Yeah. That's exactly what he said to his mate.
Like, oh, I got well done over. Got
done over by my bloody brothers.
Bloody brothers. Well, done me in, mate.
But again, I think it's that sort of weird sensibility, the same sort of thing that the reason why Hammer horror films were so popular, because they had that kind of bit of blood and violence, the same kind of basic idea that had been done a million times before, but just did it with a bit more energy and viciousness.
Yeah.
That's
pep sort of and vim.
Yeah, I guess so. And of course, the film, the music is
also very
memorable.
Ennio Morricone did the soundtrack, and it's just so iconic. Like, I knew half the soundtrack without even having seen the film before.
He ended up working pretty much for the rest of his life with I think this is their first film with Leone, wasn't it?
Yeah, first film.
Did they go to school together?
They did, yeah. That's they went to school strange. Together. How lovely is
that? That is lovely.
Maybe we could grow up, we can do spaghetti westerns together.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I'm thinking maybe we just do like a... all our westerns will be a little bit like Bugsy Malone, though. Splatter guns. have young children play the roles.
I'm not sure about that.
Have ponies instead of horses.
I'm going to veto that.
Okay. Well, someone will do it. Now we've said it out loud, someone else will do it, definitely. But yeah, it's haunting, the music, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, it's great. Woo! I'm going to try and do a bit now.
Yeah.
Wow, wow, wow.
It's better, definitely, in the film. And matched with the shots of the, not Wild West, but Spanish, Italian, sorry.
I say it's always a Spanish.
Oh, of course, it's Spain, not Italian.
Yeah, it's filmed in Spain. Spain's a good stand-in for the Wild West.
It looks American, though.
Yeah, I was well impressed.
Massive vistas and just open sort of land. It did make me think, actually, what does the actual real Wild West look like? Because it's so often filmed in Spain. It just looks completely different. Right, so I recommend this film. Would you recommend the film?
I would definitely recommend this film. It was much better than I thought it would be. I thought I might get a bit bored or not be that interested based on what I'd experienced with westerns before. But actually, it's bloody brilliant. Go and watch it.
Are you keen now to watch the...
I'm going to go and watch the others. I've seen they're on Netflix.
And yeah, definitely I would also recommend it today. But you know, I wasn't exactly sure if it would be quite as good as The Good, the Bad and the Ugly. In a way, I kind of prefer it. It's more kind of punk-like attitude to it.
It's snappy.
Yeah, it just reminded me of... The whole way through, it just reminded me of those kind of like a sort of 70s horror films where it's just brutal, straight to the point, nasty, but compelling. And that's kind of... It had the sort of same energy to it that those films had. Yep. So yeah, definitely would recommend it. Well, before we finish, our secret sponsor for this week.
Yeah, our secret sponsor is Bobby Joe Warren. That's a great American name, isn't it?
That is.
Bobby Joe Warren.
And I believe he is an American.
I believe he's from Texas.
Ooh, it's even more. Yeah. That's proper American.
Anyway, you can follow him on Twitter at Bobby J. Warren. Bobby J. Warren. And he's got a blog at bobbyjoesmovieblog.blogspot.com.
Yeah, and certainly he gets a mention because he talks about the William Castle film, The Tingler. Which, yeah, you've got to enjoy a film where the whole gimmick was giving the audience mild electric shocks while they watched it.
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah, bring that back.
Yeah, just only for certain people who insist on using their phones. Or that'd be great. So, that's it for this week.
Yep, so if you've got any films you'd like us to watch, please write to us at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at 101films or like our Facebook page where we sometimes put links to sort of funny things. So well worth giving it a like at 101films.
You can also have a look at our blog at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen.com. We're going to do another special soon, aren't we?
We are. Well, we're devoting this Saturday to watching a load of films. Probably after a night on the Friday night, we're probably going to be drinking quite a bit. But yeah, so it'll be a nice come down on Saturday.
Look forward to a hungover podcast.
Ugh, yes.
See you.
Bye.
Bye. Really aware of popular culture.
No, you're not, are you?
No.
That's not your thing. No. You deride me for not knowing about anything about films, but you've known about nothing about anything else. So
that's pretty much it.